This is my wife, Ione.
This is Ean, our daughter, who was... why don't you stand up, Ean, so they can see you. She doesn't get much taller when she stands up. She was born in Germany when we were over there with the military. She'll be going to Coronado High School. She's older than she looks. But we're younger than we look. And then Chaz, would you stand up, Chaz? I think Chaz just passed her. Chaz is going to be going to the Christian school here. And Chaz was born in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, so Ian's a German and Chaz is a Cajun. So afterwards, if you got a minute, you can ask them if they can speak a little German, a little Cajun. I thought that what we'd like to do, in fact, I wasn't asked to do this. I asked if I could do it. I think most of you have seen me running in and out of the building over there where most of you work and around here several times with graphite from this little finger up to my elbow after drawing on my little drawing board back there in the corner. But Alan and I wanted to take the opportunity to share a little bit about ourselves. We'd like for you to know who we are. And unfortunately, I don't know all of you, but I hope in the future we'll get to know you a little better. Some of you I know. Some of you wish you didn't know me. I do those drawings and hand them to you, and you say, oh, no, I'm going to have to build this. But we thought we'd just share our testimony and then give you an opportunity, hopefully, if we have enough time at the end, to ask us some questions and kind of declare who we are and why we're here. And I'm going to let Ione start off.
The reason I get to give the testimony is because our life is so much alike. In fact, we were delivered by the same doctor 10 days apart. So you just kind of run a piece of carbon paper between us and you have our life.
In fact, we may have gotten mixed up. She may be me and I may be her.
Well, as a young child, my life was pretty uneventful. You know, you eat, sleep, get dressed, go to school. And that's about the extent of it. You know, I never broke any bones. I never did anything too bad other than sit in the street and rock my doll in the rocking chair. But, you know, other than that, it was...
The only time she made the front page of the paper.
Yeah, that's true. And for Chuck, his life consisted of living on a farm. His father was a cotton farmer. And he's the oldest of three children, and I'm the youngest of two. And my life revolved around me. I was number one. You know, you asked me if I loved my parents, and I would have said, sure, I love my parents. They clothe me, they feed me, they put a roof over my head, you know, and they look after every need. Sure, I love them. But it was all because it revolved around me and what I could get out of it. Chuck was a little different. He was more interested in pleasing his parents, and this really proved to be a real struggle between us and later on in years. And all of this started in Louisiana, if you hadn't figured that out by listening to me talk. And when I was 11 years old, I knew that I wanted to accept Christ as my Savior. I'm not sure why, but it was a very important thing to me. And I can remember, let me just interject this. The church I grew up in was not really a scripturally founded church. It was pretty weak. But I knew that it was very important that I accept Christ as my Savior. And I wanted to do it on a Sunday where I could be baptized on Easter. And in our particular church, like you go forward one Sunday, then you were baptized the next Sunday. So I made sure that I picked out Palm Sunday to go forward and make my confession of faith so that I could be baptized on Easter. Now, you know, that can have all kind of scriptural significance now with Christ's death, burial, and resurrection. And the same for me. I didn't know all of that. All I knew was that I wanted to be baptized on the day that Christ arose from the dead. So that's as far as my scriptural background went. Chuck came to know Christ instead of crawfishing. His church was having a revival. And one afternoon, the pastor came out to the house out in the country and asked to speak to him. Well, he wasn't too excited about going up to the house and talking to some preacher, but he figured that might be okay, and so he gave up crawfishing instead.
It's a hard decision.
That's right. It's a lot of fun to go crawfishing if you've never been. So anyway, this pastor asked Chuck if he would like to accept Christ as his Savior, and he said yes. And then a change really began in both of our lives. Chuck was probably more aware of the change in his life because the church he went to was very strong scripturally, and he knew what he believed and why he believed. I didn't. All I knew was that I believed. But I do know that a change began to take place in my life, because from then on, had you asked me, do I love my parents, I would have said yes, but I knew it was for a different reason. It was more than just the fact that they clothed me and fed me. You know, I can't explain it. All I knew was it was different. And I really attribute my faith a great deal to my mother. Whenever I would ask a question, she would often didn't have the answer. So her response was, well, I own. Sometimes God doesn't intend for us to question him. All he asks us to do is to believe. And so the two words, just believe, took on a tremendous significance to me. And through the years, since we really began walking with the Lord, I've sat in groups and watched a lot of people ask a lot of questions. And when they would get the answers, it really helped me because it broadened my thinking and it, you know, gave me a lot of answers. But oftentimes I sit there and I think, why do they have to know the answer to that question? And I go back to the fact that my mother really instilled in me just to believe God and believe what he said without having to ask, bombard him with 30, 11 dozen questions, you know. So there, after that part of our life, I kind of began to enclose myself in the protective shield. I went into a state of dormancy, I guess you would say. Chuck and I met when we were 15 years old in 10th grade civics class. I kept floating.
5 years.
You're not supposed to hear that. It creeps up on you sooner than you think. But anyway, I was flirting with the two guys on either side of him, and they never paid any attention to me, and it was Chuck that asked me out.
I'm nearsighted. I thought she was looking at me.
I was really flunking civics, and in order to get out of the teacher's line of vision, I'd turn my head and hide behind the shoulder of my friend who was sitting next to me. And of course, I looked right to the back of the room where he sat. Perfect, you know, just very convenient. The only spiritual input I had was church camp. I went every year. And at the age of 17, Chuck and I started dating at 15, and we went steady from then on. But we never talked about God, what we believed, or how we felt, because that was one that Satan just took that and drove a wedge in our relationship. And when I was at camp, when I was 17 years old, I told God that I would do whatever he wanted me to do, irregardless of the cost, that I wanted to follow him. Of course, I had zero idea what that meant. My vision, I didn't have any. It was just, there wasn't any. And in my mind, if I was going to follow God, then that must mean I had to go to a Christian college and be a foreign missionary. You reckon they have a course called foreign missionary? That's as far as I went, because I just didn't know any better. But that commitment was really real. When Chuck was a senior, an uncle died that he was pretty close to, and plus his grandmother had just passed away. And I can remember him trying to talk to me about it. Well, I didn't know what to say, so there was no communication. Then one day he was cleaning out his wallet, and he ran across the verses Ephesians 2:8-9 that he'd been carrying around for no telling how many years. It says, for by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It is a gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. And so on. And that took on a real important significance to him, because that really gave him the assurance of his salvation. He folded the verse, put it back in his wallet, and never really said too much to me. He was really longing for someone to talk to about life and death, but he didn't have anyone except this real cute little gal. And then when we were seniors, and this was toward the...
You weren't supposed to tell that part.
Oh, well, that's part of it. We did break up for 3 months.
Not in the notes.
Oh. ad-lib a little.
Okay.
But anyway, he thought it really made him begin to question his love for me, because he felt he could talk to Joanne about these important issues, and he couldn't talk to me about them. Okay, well, he wanted to be an architect. Well, I didn't know this, really. But so he went to LSU, and the only place I could go to college was up at Louisiana Tech in Ruston, because that was the only place you could go to school on a monthly basis, you know, where they send you room and board 1 month at a time, because my folks didn't have the money to send me any other way. And I kind of kept one bag packed in case the check didn't arrive. And by God's grace, I made it through college. How, I don't know. It's just His grace, because I hated every minute of it.
Told her I wouldn't marry her until she finished.
Well, yeah, you know, and people ask me if I'm goal-oriented, and I always say no, not particularly, but boy, I had that goal in mind. All I wanted was to be Chuck's wife and to live in a house he designed. So when it really came down to the brass tacks, God lost, because I wasn't going to do anything but be Chuck's wife. And I can remember that commitment haunting me and thinking about it. And after my 4 years in school, we did get married, and we married his last year at LSU. Well, he suffered through 4 years of ROTC so he could go into the Army as an officer rather than an enlisted man. So he fills out all of the papers, you know, that you go through. And we got first choice on everything. Germany, Stuttgart, and the Transportation Corps. He wanted transportation because the school was at Fort Eustis, Virginia, which is close to Washington, D.C., and there's some architectural things there that are worth seeing.
And telling all the secrets.
And he wanted Germany. Well, yeah. You know, his veteran, Bannister and Fletcher were our guide to Europe. It's an architectural history book. So we had a fabulous 2 years in history with me, I mean in Germany, with me carrying this history book on my lap, you know, all through Europe. But it was great. Well, we lived on the third...
True.
It is true. We lived on the third floor of this old, old German building. And the only other American people there were Wally and Chloe Hudson. They were the navigator representatives there. And we got to be very close friends with them. Played an awful lot of Scrabble, drank an awful lot of coffee. Every once in a while they would say something and I'd cut them off, because I knew what they were after and I wasn't going to have any part of it. And so I'm really gracious.
She was smarter than I was. I didn't know what they were after.
One day we were waxing the 27 steps that Chloe and I had to wax every 2 weeks. Oh, that was a trick. But anyway, she asked me if I was interested in Bible study, and I said, nope, not me. When I got out of college, I quit studying, and I'm never going to do it again. I quit. Don't want any part of it. So, I mean, what else can she do but smile? And asked me for a cup of coffee. I mean, it was just, you know, I didn't leave any doors open. Well, Ian was born in October after we arrived. I mean, we arrived in July, and she was born that October. And she was cute, you know, as all first children are to their parents. She may have been ugly, but she was sure cute to us.
About that long.
And we almost threw her back. She was so little, but we decided to keep her. But anyway, when she was about 7 months old, she was really cute then, sitting on the living room floor playing, just being so cute. And I realized that all of a sudden that I had a phenomenal responsibility in raising our daughter and whoever else God gave us. And it really scared me. My major in college was speech therapy, which is not a whole lot more than clinical psychology. And I realized very clearly that even when I taught school for 2 years, that I could have an impact in these kids' lives for good or for bad. And I decided I needed some help with Ian. Don't press me on this verse, but listen. It says Matthew 10:37, "He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me." Now, I don't know what the context of this is, you know, technically speaking, or however you want to express it. But all I needed was the word daughter and the phrase, if you love the daughter or son more than me. That one gripped me like I've never quite had anything grip me before. So I decided, well, maybe I do need some help. Maybe this Bible study isn't such a bad deal after all. So one day, Wally asked Chuck if he was interested, and we said, yeah, we'd be interested in doing it. Well, and I don't know whether to say in those days or not,
but in those days,
whenever you did a Navigator Bible study, the men did it over here, and the women did it over here, and the twain shall never meet.
That's even if you were married.
Yeah. And I said, uh-uh. I'm not going to have any part of that.
She was very gracious again.
Either we do it as a couple or we don't do it at all. Because I knew that Chuck and I had zero... Our communications were pretty good, but when it came to scriptural things, there was none. So I decided that if we were going to get anything out of this together as a couple, then we needed to do it together, because otherwise we would be missing. So it was really a new experience for Wally and Chloe, but they consented. They figured anything to get those two knotheads in Bible study. Yeah. But the real reason I did not want to get into Bible study was I knew about my commitment. And it was very obvious that they didn't want to just do Bible study. They wanted my life. And I wasn't sure I wanted them to have my life. I was still clinging to it. Because all I wanted to do was live in a house that Chuck designed, because he was the world's greatest architect, just waiting for a place to happen.
That's true.
That's right. I mean, you asked me, he would have told you. I mean, in no uncertain terms. But anyway, we started doing Bible study. Then Matthew 6:33 was really the first verse that Chuck and I ever claimed together. And really, it's our verse for our life. But seek ye first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. And as we did a study on the preceding verses, we realized that the things that God would give to us were the things that we needed to sustain life. And that all we had to do was to seek his kingdom and his righteousness. His kingdom being men and his righteousness being Christ. So if we sought those two things, Christ and men, then we would never have to worry for our life, because God is faithful and he would take care of all of our needs. And so then the time in Germany came to a close and we had to decide what we were going to do. Well, during that time, Jim Downing was in charge of all of the military work in Europe. So he had made several trips to Stuttgart. And first off, you know, we were just kind of warm bodies sitting in a room. And then by the time he left, you know, we were ready to leave in his last trip over there, where we were in doing Bible study and sharing our faith with people and really beginning to have some kind of effective walk with God. So I guess that kind of caught Jim's eye and ear a little bit. We received a letter from headquarters, and I guess it must have said something to the effect, hey, would you like to come to the Glen for training? Well, what in the fat did that mean? We didn't have a clue. We were around Wally and Chloe for over a year and a half before we ever heard of the wheel. He had an aversion to cliches, and which I am eternally grateful for. We got the principles, and we got our eyes centered on Christ and not the little ditties, you know, the Big Dipper and the wheel and so forth. So we read the letter, and it didn't really mean anything to us, and we didn't understand what it was all about. So we filed it in the round file cabinet and pressed on, because we were convinced that God wanted us to go back to LSU and have some kind of ministry among the students. So, you know, we did. Wally was an extremely faithful man of prayer. He's now with the Lord, but he prayed that we would never, ever settle down and feather the nest. In other words, he didn't want us to get too comfortable. And so he prayed that, I know, very faithfully for us, and I really am thankful. We were at LSU for a couple of years. Then Jim had to take some kind of insurance course. I'm not sure in regard to what, but anyway, there were two places, and he chose LSU. Okay, and Chuck says, hurry up. Okay, so Jim called and came down there, and we talked to him, and he was the one that kind of shoved us out of the nest and said, okay, get going. And then not too long after that, He called on the phone and introduced us to Walt Hendrickson. This is when the NAVS instituted the regional system, and Walt was the Southwest Regional Director. So we tied in with Walt and Liette and their ministry in Texas and that kind of thing. And then God really began to bless and open up a lot of things on the LSU campus. Well, then Walt and Liette asked us to go to a training program. It was probably the training program to end all training programs. There were 13 couples, and it lasted for 10 weeks. You move your whole family, the whole shooting match there. The men got 40-hour week jobs, and we started in. It almost did us all in, but we survived. You know, the motto, survivors make good men, kind of became our motto, because every moment of every day was allocated for something. You didn't have any free time. I mean that literally. So I guess we were kind of naive. All the people in the training program kept talking about where were the navigators going to ask them to go. I thought, boy, that's rather presumptuous. How do you know they want you? And so, I mean, that was kind of my thoughts. I never really said it to anybody. And so Chuck and I had decided that our 4 years at LSU were about up, and that when we went to the training program, we probably would not go back to LSU, but we didn't have a clue on where we were going, what we were going to do. So we bravely suggested that we stay with Walt and Liette there in Fort Worth, and they didn't seem too enthusiastic about it, and I thought, So we started praying separately. We pray together, but we also pray separately, and so we started asking God where he wanted us to go. Okay, well, the only place I could get that I could not get out of my mind was Atlanta, Georgia. I guess maybe that was because that was the only place I swore I'd never live. Hated that place. But anyway, that was just driving through on the highway. And so then Chuck had breakfast with Walt one day, and then he called me. When Chuck called from work, he said, where are we going? And I said, we're going to Atlanta. Why? He said, well, that's it. But we couldn't figure out why we were going to Atlanta. Well, then after we talked to Walt some more, we found out that Skip and Buzzy were in the process of moving there, and that they thought it would be a good idea if
everybody
we...
Everybody may not know Skip and Buzzy.
Skip and Buzzy Gray. They're now in Virginia. But, you know, so I figured, well, okay, we're going to go there and be with Skip and Buzzy. So we did, and Skip called hotter than a potato one day because we hadn't written. We wanted to know where were we, when were we going to write. I didn't know I was supposed to write it. All I knew was we were moving. Anyway, we arrived on the scene, and it was a fantastic 5 years.
If you can ever become a navigator through the back door, we're it.
Yes, we're the prime example. Really didn't understand. So we were supposed to be there maybe a year or 2 years and ended up being there 5 years. Chuck opened up the work with Craig Van Gelder at Georgia Tech, and then we developed a couples training center, and he ended up being the state director before it was all over. Okay, so then it came time to move, and Chuck came home one day, and he said, well, honey, he said, you know, heretofore, we've always kind of had a little bit of insight as to what God's going to ask us to do. But he said, this time, we're not going to know. We won't have clue one about it, and it's going to come, well, I feel like it's going to come through the NAV leadership. And he said, I will not be involved in the decision-making process, and to use our expression, though, it's going to be off the wall. And so I said, okay. So I kind of got myself geared up for that one, because that one looked like a biggie. And the first assignment was going to be Jacksonville, Florida. Well, that turned us on like what?
Don't say it.
Okay, it didn't do too much for us. Well, it didn't meet the criteria. One thing, Chuck was in on the decision-making process, and it wasn't off the wall. And it did come through the NAV leadership, but that was about it. So Don Lanier, our regional director, kept saying, why aren't you getting excited? Well, we felt like we would never, ever make it. We even went down and talked to Roy and Audrey Sherwood, whose home we were going to live in, and got all the information. But yet, it was missing. Okay, so the next thing that came up was to go to Germany. And that one came through the NAV leadership, and Chuck was not involved in the decision-making process on that one. But we had thought about it. So it didn't meet the third criteria. And he was out here at the Glen on the materials team, and we had already said yes to the assignment. And then he got word to scratch, going to Germany. That was really embarrassing, too, because they'd given us a going-away party in Atlanta.
And we didn't.
Gave us a color TV and all sorts of stuff and had a sit-down formal dinner, about 100 people, and then they had to put up with us for another year.
But when we left at the end of that next year, they didn't even say goodbye.
See ya.
Okay. Much is enough.
So then when he was on the materials team, he was out here again, and there were supposedly no more meetings and all this kind of stuff. And then they said, what about Sacramento, California? Sacramento, California. Oh, wow. That was off the wall. Oh, was that off the wall. My idea of California was it's a bunch of bull from the Chamber of Commerce. You don't even want to go there on vacation.
Where's Al?
I hope Al didn't hear that. And they're not supposed to be hiding in the corner. But anyway, that was my thoughts of California. And it came through the NAV leadership, and Chuck was not involved in the decision, so we knew that was it. And it had that right ring in our hearts and our minds, and we knew that that was it. Well, after we got to California, I think I was there 3 months, and you would have thought I was a native Californian. Oh, wow, that's the closest thing to heaven, I think. Oh, we really liked it. Felt very much at home. We were in the Central Valley. It's very rural. Had two farmers in our staff. One was Lynn Sanny, and the other one was Don and Diana Schmier. And so we just fit right in. It was just like a hand in a glove. We thought that was it for us. And so it was an exciting 4 years there. And I'll let Chuck take up now and tell you how we got from Sacramento to Colorado Springs.
Well, we did enjoy California. Probably the thing that was the hardest thing that caused us in the area of leaving was the fact that we didn't have any problems. When you go from one place to the other, you'd like to be mad at somebody. And that makes moving easier. But I've always preached that when you go from one transition to the next, it ought to be a positive one, so you don't leave any emotional leaks behind. But it is difficult to do that. It's difficult to leave when everything is okay. And that's the situation that we're in. We had several responsibilities there. I had the responsibility for the Central Valley staff, 9 people, and they were scattered from one end of the California to the other. And then I was responsible for developing a community ministry in Sacramento, and then I commuted out here. That wasn't on my job description, but it did happen. And the Lord seemed to begin to talk to us in two ways. One was through architecture. Some years ago, I had gone full-time, and I had put down architecture because it was a decision that we had made in Germany to do whatever he wanted us to do, and we'd counted that cost, which was kind of hard for us, hard for me, the idea of not being an architect. And one of the things that I really began to worry about is if I ever got to the place where I wasn't an architect, 10 years later, if God wanted me to become an architect again, I'd be behind the power curve. I'd be so far behind my contemporaries that I'd never catch up. I'd be back in the back room drawing bathroom details again. And that's not too glamorous, in case you're wondering what that means. And so it was interesting. I didn't want to design the building that a lot of you work in.
But I knew it was.
Yeah, she knows more about it. She figures out the will of God before I do, kind of wait, And we were here for a conference, and I was trying to sneak out of town because I got ripples that they wanted me to work on the building, and I didn't want to do it because I couldn't figure out how you could come out smelling like a rose on that deal, being a navigator and designing a navigator building. And that may not have been very good, but that's what I thought. And so I think Bob Stevens really was the culprit, who I don't know whether he had a theophany from God or whether he wanted to do me in. I don't know which one it was. But anyway, I had to cash a check in order to get out of town, and they caught me in the building over there trying to get out of town, and I said, won't you stay? And as a result of that, I knew that God wanted me to do it, so there wasn't any question about it. Well, in the process of time, the thing begins to get out of the ground on the hill out there, and there were a few things happening where I'd get offers to be an architect, why don't you come join our firm, and those kind of things. And I had kind of a get behind me Satan attitude about all those things, because I had my ministry and I said, God got me out of the architecture business. I won't do what God wants me to do, and I don't want to fool with that because I'm busy doing what I'm doing. And I guess about 2 years went along, and I really didn't consider it very well until I realized that the one big fear that I had when I made that decision earlier, God had kind of wiped away. Because with the advent of the building and the fact that there were several things we did that were kind of innovative out there, I began to get offers in firms saying, come work with us instead of for us. And that's only one word, but that's a big difference. And the reason that I was excited about the possibility of working with instead of for is because I would like to be able to control my time. And the reason I'd like to be able to control my time is because I'd like to, first of all, give my life and give our life together to people. And if I had that opportunity to do it. The other way God began to talk to us was through architecture and through our ministry there in Sacramento. We looked around us, and in our community ministry, there were builders and contractors and all those kind of people that we had in Bible study and that we were ministering to. And we began to ask ourselves the question, what are we really doing? And what is God really saying? And we'd have a prayer breakfast or something, and one of the guys would say, hey, why don't you come on out on the job with me and look at my buildings and tell me what you think? So we'd run out and do that. So we had some kind of affinity with each other, and I could look those guys in the eye, and we could talk turkey. None of this, well, I don't have time to have a quiet time and all that stuff, because I've been there, and that's where I lived. So it was kind of a good thing. We realized that over the years that God is probably going to have the most influence that we have in people's lives. He'll probably use architecture. And I guess another thing, which I don't have on my notes, and our time is running out, but I began to wonder what I wanted to do when I grew up. You ever wanted that? Several months ago, Andy Williams became 50 years old, and I think it was really significant. You may not like Andy Williams, the singer. I don't know about him too much, but he said this on the news. He said, somebody asked him, said, well, what do you think about when you're 50 years old? He says, well, I guess I'm an adult. And I thought that was significant. That doesn't sound very profound to you, I know, but to me it was very profound. The fact that the guy realized that he was an adult. And I noticed that I was 35 years old. I'm 39 now, by the way. And I was 35 years old before I began to realize this isn't a dry run. Somehow you get in this life, and even the Christian life, you kind of keep waiting for things to happen. And you keep waiting for some big deal to happen, or some big ministry God is going to develop for you, or some big opportunity or something. Like, it's not going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen until you sit down before God and decide what you want to do and go do it. So basically what I began to do is start asking myself the questions I used to ask everybody else. Like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Where are you going to be 10 years from now? And basically I decided where I wanted to be 10 years from now. And the move to Colorado Springs is one step in that direction, because I believe that God is doing that in our life in terms of what, when we're at age 50, what kind of ministry we're going to have with people. Well, you might ask the question, why do you want to do this in Colorado Springs? And one of the things that really muddied the water about the whole deal was these friends of mine who are builders back in Sacramento says, man, you want to be an architect? So you can influence people in that area of life, and you also want to be a navigator, well, why don't you sign on with us? How much money do you want to make this month? How much do you want to draw? We'll put $50,000 in the pot, and when you use that up, we'll put more. And then when you get your speed up, well, then we'll let you buy us out, because you don't want us hanging on forever, do you? And I was thinking, what are these guys talking about?
And they also said, we have this really neat lot that where you can design your own house.
Design your own house, tucked in the side of the Sierras. Exciting, you see. And so then I thought, well, maybe this is it, you see. And, certainly this must be the will of God. It's too good. I'll tell you what, the first thought I had, though, honestly, was this is too good. It must not be the will of God. Have you ever thought of that? Somehow I've gotten to the place a lot of times where I think, I don't like to admit this, but honestly, I kind of view God as, the big man with the long white beard up there, and he's got an axe and he's just ready to fall as soon as I step out of line. And I begin to think that certainly God couldn't have something in line for me that was so good. And So I had a couple of my buddies minister to me at that point, and I really appreciated that. Because if you're not careful, and I'm preaching a little bit now, but if you're not careful, I think a lot of times we get into the place where we think that God's got a lot of hoops that He wants us to jump through. And I think over the last couple of years, the thing I realize is more than anything, He wants to give us the desire of our heart. Just be careful what you desire. Well, we didn't have any peace about the thing in Sacramento, and we wondered, now what do we want to do with our life? Well, one of the things we want to do is that we want to have an influence on people for Christ. But as a state director, at that level, and I don't see any of my bosses in here, but at that level, if you're not careful, you never get to meet any non-Christians. You keep working with the Christians, and you can't quite get to them out there. The only time, you know, you talk to the waitress at the counter, or you can talk to the people on the airplane next to you, and you do all those kind of things. But I'm talking about having, and you don't have time for your family. Not your family, but the family, the people next to you, and your neighbors, and so forth. So you don't ever get to non-Christians. And I thought, well, maybe what I would like to do is do a couple things at once. One is I'd like to be a navigator, because I are one. The other thing is that I would like to influence people for Christ, to disciple them, if you please, where they're living. And I feel like that you've got to win your spurs wherever you're working. You've heard the navigator say that? It's true. But it's not only true in the navigator system, it's true in every system. You have to gain a hearing. And the way that you do it in business or architecture is to be a good one and to be competent and to do the job. And so that's the process that we're in right now. And so then I thought, well, where do we want to do this in the world? I mean, we can go anywhere we want to, right, if we did this. And I said, well, I would like to do it in the hardest place possible. So I was talking to Bob Sheffield, and I told him, I said, if I have 1 foot in and 1 foot out, where would be the hardest place possible to do this? He said, Colorado Springs. I said, you got it. That's where I want to go. I want to go to Colorado Springs. Well, why do you want to go to Colorado Springs? I said, because the Vatican is there. And you understood that, didn't you? You were part of the Vatican. Well, and the idea is to influence people out there and really disciple them for Christ, but also be able to move in and out of that. The one thing that I've done, as far as my ministry is concerned, I asked Bob if I could answer to him instead of Lewis Hill. That means I skipped a rung. I'm answering to Lewis Hill's boss, and Lewis Hill really ought to be my boss. And Lewis and I have talked about this, so we don't have a problem. I didn't really know Lewis at that time. But the reason was I felt like there were two areas of ministry that I want to be involved in here. One is those people out there that I come in contact with on a workaday world basis. Okay? The other one is what I would call the more formal navigator ministry. And my wife is looking at me. You know, maybe I better stop right here and say, you know, we have been warned. I really got into this thing today with fear and trembling. You said, be careful what you say to those people, because other people have said it and it hasn't meant what they've said. And they don't. They really wonder what you're going to do to them when you come there. Well,
we're kind of paranoid. We don't know what to say.
I'm afraid we're going to say the wrong thing. We're here as the representatives of the navigators here in Colorado Springs. And what I wanted to say was, we would like to be of service to you some way. But I was told, don't say that, because that means something else. But I don't even know what it means, but it is true. Do you know what I'm talking about? In other words, I don't have any designs on your life. And one of the things that I would like to say to you right now is thank you. Because you are doing a service that, for us, that's incredible. I mean, Charlene and the ladies up there in staff accounting bailed me out more than once.
They've not only bailed us out, but they bail everybody else out that gets, you know, in a tight. And
so what I would like to do, what we'd like to do is do two things. We'd like to say to you, we'd like to have a ministry with people in our frame of reference, which is architecture, but we'd also like to say to you, we would like to develop a ministry in Colorado Springs, but we don't know what that's supposed to look like. In other words, I am not a navigator who has come to town and looked around and said, they got some problems in here. I'm going to come in and I'm going to shape this place up. Got more navigators sitting in this spot than anywhere. You know, we're used to being out there where you're the only one within a 100-mile radius. Well, I mean, you come around, look around here, and you see all these navigators, and you think, man, this is going to be easy. Well, we don't have that feeling. nor do we have the feeling that we want anybody to jump through any hoops. So what we're in the process of trying to do is to come up with what the ministry of the navigators needs to look like in Colorado Springs. And we need your help. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to say it to you today, is that we would like your input.
He's serious when he says that we don't have any design on it, and we don't have any program that we've mapped out and that we're going to try to shove down on your head. We're really honest in saying that we don't know exactly. We really don't. And we are open, and we want to hear what you have to say. Seriously.
I'm not sure how many times to repeat that. And if we don't live up to that, you can tell me. When I moved to Sacramento, Gigi Ching, I don't know how many of you know Gigi, but she was our girls rep out there at UC Davis. And about 6 months after we'd been out there, she said, "Well, Chuck," she said, we got to know each other a little bit, and she says, "Well, we wondered what your thing was going to be when you got out here." And I said, "What are you talking about? I don't know why I miss all these things. I just kind of naive." And I said, "What do you mean, your thing?" And she says, "Well, you know, every navigator's got a thing." I said, "Oh, they do? I'm not sure what that is." And she said, "Would you explain that to me?" And she said, "Oh, yeah. I mean, we wondered, is scripture memory your thing? You know, is training your thing? You know, is Bible study your thing? You know, is witnessing your thing? Every night out there, you know, hit. You know, what hoop are we going to have to jump through in order to please you?" And I said, "Well, we've been here 6 months. Have you figured it out yet?" And she said, "Yeah. And I don't like it." And I said, "Well, tell me about it." She said, "Well, I can't come up with anything. Your thing is no thing." And I said, well, what do you mean?" She says, "Well, if I could call," she says, "you don't have one." And that's frustrating, because I don't know what kind of hoop to jump through to please you. And then later on, Gid Atkinson, who was at the same place and working with Gigi, about a couple months later, he says, "I've come up with it." "Well, I didn't know what he was talking about."
And we had fun staff meetings.
What are you talking about?" He says, "I've come up with your thing." And I said, "Well, what is my thing?" And he said, "Well, your thing is putting a monkey on everybody's back." And I said, "Boy, that doesn't sound good. I'd like for it to be more spiritual than that." He said, "Well," he says, "your thing, you won't let anybody get away with anything." Now, what does that mean? He said, "Well, you always force us to look God in the eye every time we do anything." And you say, "You can do whatever you want to do." And he said, "That's hard." And I thought about that, and I thought that's just the way everybody operated. Because I don't propose to be able to figure out the will of God for anybody. I have a difficult enough time to figure out the will of God for myself. But one of the things, except Ian, I can figure out the will of God for my daughter.
I saw the smile come on her face about that time.
And don't you forget it. Well, so what I'm saying is that if I can force somebody, force, kick, scream, pull, drag, somebody in their decision-making process to really make real, emotional, objective decisions about their life, then that's what I'd like to do. I think that that's what it talks about in the Scripture when it talks about fellowship. That you encourage me to do the will of God as I understand it for my life, and I encourage you to do the will of God as you understand it for your life. So basically what I'm here for is to help you in your walk with God, and as that spills over in other people's lives. And between now and whenever Bob Sheffield starts breathing down my neck, I've got to figure out what that's going to look like. And I would like as much of your input as possible. And some of you I've been chatting with briefly, and if you see me swishing through the building, say, "Hey, you know, I got a little deal here I want to tell you." And I'd appreciate that. And we're serious, because we believe that it would be, I only have one idea about the ministry as far as strategy is concerned. I think to turn my back on what's going on out here, with you here, with many of you having significant ministries years before we even thought about coming here, I think that would be wrong. So what I would like to do is to come up with some kind of ministry, whatever that is, and we always think of activities, but I'm not sure I'm even thinking of activities now, but that will help you in your ministry and in your walk. And I've got to figure out what that is, and I need your help to do it. So we're asking you for your help and your prayer in the process.
Lots of prayer.
Al says time is up. I'm sure glad that you all decided to come and listen to us today on your own.